start with the Masilas Yesharim.
I think it's a good preface to the halacha. So start with that. We're up to Hamadrega Hashlishis. Something that everybody has, whatever.
Right.
You have where we are? Perek Yud Aleph.
Okay.
Hamadrega Hashlishis Achar Hagezel V'Arayis Le'inyan HaChemda Hineu Yisra HaMacholo. So he's explaining, and he's going to continue explaining, this is a long parak, different kinds of averas that a person can easily fall into and not be totally clean of them. And even if he may not transgress the ikar things, like Gezel or Arayis, like we learned, but there are so many nuances and so many subtle branches and sub-branches that if you really want to reach this mid of Nikios, then you have to be very, very careful even from those things that are very, very subtle. So the first thing that people are very hard to stay away from is Gezel, and that we already learned. And the second thing is Arayis, and now the third thing. Third thing is Isur HaMacholos, food, and eating things that aren't permissible.
So which
Perek Yud Aleph. Hamadrega Hashlishis. The drive to eat only comes after the drive of Arayos, that's a stronger drive, and the drive for a person to steal and to amass wealth or whatever is the first one. Okay, that's why the Gemara says that Rubam Begezel, most people can't avoid taking things that aren't theirs, and we said that doesn't mean that they're all gazlonim, it means that they can't be completely clean of gezel. And what's it called? Arayis also similar. And then comes the next drive, which Gemara doesn't mention as one that most people or a good portion of people are involved in, is eating things that aren't okay. Bein min atreifas atzman, whether it's things that are what we normally call treif, but treif is an umbrella word that really is not what it really means. A treifa is a specific kind of iser, which is an animal that has some kind of one of 18 kinds of diseases or physical problems, like a hole in the brain, a hole in the lung, right, from which it would die. And even if you shecht it, it's still not kosher. That's called a treifa. Okay. But we use the word, what's it called, treif, and he's using it here also as a catch-all phrase to mean things that are not kosher, things you're not allowed to eat.
The word here actually means, probably means treifas itself. Besides the fact that historically, that meaning of treif wasn't at the time of the Ramchal.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Hey, because I don't know if we should have started then with behemoth tomatoes or whatever, right? Not just mentioned treifos atzma. Or should have said nevelus and treifos or whatever. It's a catch-all word, right? That what's it called? Treifos means anything that's osur. Nevela, treifa, behemoth tomato, those kinds of things. Because he doesn't mention the other ones. He mentions basar b'chalav, chaylev, dam, right? But he should have mentioned, what's it called, the veil and tomato. Those are even worse than stam treifas. Treifas means all those things, right? Treifas atzmon means all of the things that are not kosher because they're the kinds of animals that aren't kosher, right? And or they get mixed up with other things. Bein binyan basar b'chalav, or basar b'chalav, which is kosher meat, but mixed with milk. O chalev, which is from a kosher animal where you're allowed to eat the meat, but it's part of the animal, it's not kosher. Same thing with Dan. Okay. The Inyan Bishulei Goyim, the Inyan Geulei Goyim. The same thing goes with things that are 100% kosher, but they were cooked or baked by Goyim. Or Yayin Nesach, or Stam Yenam, which aren't Osir per se min HaTorah. Yayin Nesach is, but Stam Yenam is not. These are Stam Isuri Durabonan. So he mentions all of the things. Again, if he meant Treifus, the classical idea of Treifus, then he left out a lot of Isurim that are worse than Treifus. Nevelis and Beimetz Meya. So here Treifus means anything that the animal itself is not kosher. Okay. The okay, Kol Eila HaNikias Vem Tzorach Dikta Godla V'Tzorach Chizuk. In all these things, right, it's not just those things themselves that are usher, but even the branches and sub-branches or whatever, which we'll see. There's a natural drive that people have to desire good tasting things. It's a normal thing for people to have an appetite and to want to eat things that taste good. Add to that the fact that when things that are not kosher, that you may not have a great desire for, but gets mixed in with other things, and then there's a loss of money involved. So you have that extra added desire not to lose the money. So you start thinking, well, you know, if I have to get rid of the kli, or I have to get rid of the food, maybe it's not so bad, or whatever. So in addition to the appetite for the food itself, even in those things where there may not be any appetite, there's also the Yetzer Hara of not wanting to lose money. Uprateim rabim kechol dinehem. How you doing? Vamavunim b'sifrei poskim. The halachas are very, very complicated and very numerous. Vamekel b'hem b'makom shomru l'hachmir emel l'mashas l'nafsha. And a person who is lenient, where you're not allowed to be lenient, right? Where the halacha is not like that. He's not talking over here being mekel and machmir. He's talking about mekel over here means to do something that's wrong. In the case where the halacha is not like that. Right, so he's basically destroying himself. Right, there's an extra added detriment of eating things that aren't kosher, because they later on I'm going to bring down that it's mitamtim esaleib, it closes up your heart. Rav Volbi says what it means is it makes you not sensitive to kedusha, takes away the sensitivity. It's an actual effect. Right? It's eating non kosher things. Makes a person more materialistic and less prone to ruchnius. And it takes away your sensitivity to ruchniusdika things. That's what it means, metantim esaleib.
What does that mean? Makes it less sensitive?
But you don't feel divrei kedusha as much as a person would. Would feel it if his neshama wasn't obstructed by all these things.
What feeling of kedusha are we talking about?
Different kinds of things.
Kedusha comes from
you don't feel Shabbos. You don't feel Shabbos as much as you would feel. You don't feel. He brings a whole lot of different things, right? He says. When Ben Olam Lechaveiro, you're not sensitive to other people's tsar, because you're more megushim and less ruchni. So all the things that ruchnius makes you sensitive to, you're not sensitive anymore. He says, right, you're not sensitive to things that happen, that could be more you to tshuva or whatever. You become very gas, and therefore you lose your sensitivity to spiritual things.
Even on things that depends on one's meisim?
What do you mean depends on
a person's acts in a kodesh took away, So is that it's going to affect how he feels? It's going to affect.
Yeah, it's going to affect how much he's sensitive to those things. You can do things to make you. You can keep Shabbos, but you'll feel Shabbos more if your neshama is more in tune, right, and not obstructed by the macholos asuros. You'll feel less Shabbos. You'll feel less in yonim ruchnim. That's all, you know, what the shaila is. Yeah.
What if you're in enough to eat something? If you had to eat something, I don't know, a holocaust or whatever.
Yeah, so it's a shaila whether if an onus person ate something ba'onus, right? If it still has the bad effect or no, since the halacha is that it's mutter, so it's not metamtim salev. It's machlokas. It's right.
And what about the shechina? The shechina also depart from him, or just the
what?
Is it the shechina also, or is it just a kedusha? Depart from the person.
The shechina.
Yeah.
The shechina is. Shechina is part of what you're sensitive to kedusha.
So then, if that's the case, is that the same thing as anger? Someone's anger, then the shechina departs from them, and they can't handle it.
That's a separate thing. That's midos roles, but it also change a person's midos too. In order to work on a person, you have to be more sensitive to things. It takes away your sensitivity. It makes you less sensitive. It makes you more megushim, right? What you eat, we'll see, has a physical effect on you. And therefore, if you eat things that are not things that can aid your neshama, then they obstruct your neshama. And your body becomes a barrier between your neshama and the external. That's partially what it means. V'hainu ki ha-macholos ha-asuros machnisim tuma mamash belibo v'nafsha shel adam. And tuma is something that separates between your neshama and your body, and it makes you again more materialistic. Till the shechina leaves you, right? You don't feel that connection. Not that the Rabbanu Shalom leaves you; you leave him. You build a barrier between you and the Rabbanu Shalom. V'hu ma she'omer b'shas gam kein v'nikmesem b'om al tikre v'nikmesem ele v'nitamtem. Right, it farstops, it closes up, it stuffs, right, like a drain, becomes stuffed. The ruchnius can't flow. Shehaveira mitamtemes libo shel adam, ki mesalekes mimenu hadeyo haamitis veruach haseichel shehakodesh baruch hu nosein lechasidim. That certain das and ruach that a person who has a closer connection with the Rabbanu Shalom has. And when you eat things that are treif, so your body becomes more of an obstruction to those things, and the b'meila, you lose that connection. There's a certain chachma that comes directly from the Rabbanu Shalom. But if you obstruct that, you cut yourself off from it, you lose that chachma. V'hinehu nishar bahami v'chomri Mishuka begashes olamazeh. The non-kosher things drag you down to be more like an animal. So you lose your kesher to your neshama, not completely, but partially, and you lose your ability to act like what a real human being is. So you become more animalistic, and the mela, what's it called, you're drawn more towards the physical things in this world than the spiritual things. This is different than all other isurim. Since they go into your body and they become part of your body. Other isurim also have an effect on a person's neshama. But here the effect is more of a physical effect too. The food becomes part of you, and the mela you identify with the isur in the food. Like things that are kosher, so you can raise them up, and one of the ideas of eating animals or anything is to raise it to a higher level, right? The plant world lives off minerals, so the minerals are elevated to the next level of existence to the plant by becoming part of the plant. So in that way, the water, the minerals, and the soil become part of the plant. They're elevated. Plants are eaten by animals, especially kosher animals eat plants, basically. They're not carnivorous, so they're herbivorous. So they, what's it called, the plants then become mamish part of the animal. So the plant is raised up one level towards the animal. When people eat meat, so they're raising everything up towards the Ribono Shel Olam, right? Because they have now the minerals and the vegetables and the animal in them. And if the meat is kosher, then it's possible to take that meat and transform it into something more human and connect it to your neshama. So your body becomes the base for the neshama, and all of this food then is raised up to be the base for the neshama. So it's raised up another level. That's the ideal. And that's why it says a person who's not on that level, who's more animalistic himself, even regular meat he shouldn't eat too much of, because it's going to pull him down to be like an animal instead of him pulling the animal up to be more kodesh. But non-kosher food doesn't have that ability to mesh with the neshama. It remains purely part of the physical part of the person. And mamela, the person becomes more animalistic. Instead of him raising the animal up to a higher level and connecting it to his neshama, the meat remains as part of his body and it has no connection to the neshama. It's just, now he has animal in him. So he becomes more animalistic. Because of that, it creates a barrier between his neshama and his das and his chachma, whatever. Right? He does, instead of having a chachma that's connected to his neshama, it's connected to his body. Just the gray cells in his brain. So what he thinks and what he feels changes. Right? Even to the point where, it says you are what you eat. And I saw once they have an experiment. I don't know if that's 100% true, but with the earthworms, that they taught a certain group of earthworms a stimulus to be sensitive to light. And whenever they would shine the light, the earthworms would know that they get fed. So it was a mamash, they learned that stimulus. They had another group of earthworms that they didn't teach this stimulus to. Okay. Then they, what's it called, and they weren't sensitive to this, they were sensitive to the light or whatever because they didn't get fed every time the light was on or whatever. And then they ground up the ones that had learned the stimulus and fed them to the other ones, and all of a sudden the other ones, without having to be trained, got that stimulus. Right? Which means that if you eat Albert Einstein, you will be a genius. But that's not exactly what it means, because it won't happen like that 100%, but it means that there is something to it. There's something chemically that transfers in the food and that makes you what you eat, literally. So if you eat animals, you become more like an animal. But if you are able to integrate that to a higher level, then just the opposite. Then the animal becomes more human, not the human becomes animalistic. Right? In other words, there's a way of changing that process. That's if the food is kosher, nothing wrong with it, and you're eating it with the right kavanah, with a bracha, whatever, and you're elevating the food. But if it's asur, then with all the brachas in the world, and all the right kavanah, it's not going to help. That kind of food can't integrate together with the neshama. If it can't, then it remains as a barrier. It remains pulling you down towards the animal. That's what he says. And what are the results of it? That's what Revoldi says. You lose your sensitivity to Kedusha. Become much more gas.
Is that what Darwin believed in?
Darwin? Yeah. What does Darwin have to do with that?
Because he believed that we become a monkey. So
not because we ate monkeys.
Yeah, maybe,
he believed that evolution and this thing are two different things. Okay. Don't blame Darwin for that also. Okay.
Darwin did maybe
Darwin. Becomes mamish part of him. So that's what's it called, that's the extra detriment of macholos asuros. And therefore, v'chidei lahudienu, shelo habehemos hatmeos, or hashkotzim bilvad heim hatmeim, right? Not only are behemos tmeos, right? Osir. In other words, animals that are not kosher at all. Or shkotzim, like, what's it called, bugs or whatever. Elagam ha-trefos, here he means real trefos, shebemin ha-kosher, atzmo heim bechlav tumah. Not only are behemos tmeos and shkotzim, right, have that effect, even kosher animals that weren't shechted properly, or, that's a nevela, or trefos, they were shechted, but there's something wrong with them. So the shechita didn't help to permit them to be eaten. They're also called tumah. They also have that bad effect. It's not only things that their very nature are not kosher, even things that by nature are kosher, but they weren't prepared properly. Omra kosu v'havdu ben atome o ben ator ubo aperish l'raboseinu ein tzarek lomer ben chamor l'para. Right? You can easily tell the difference. Right? It says you have to distinguish between that which is kosher and that which is not kosher. Tome and tor over here means kosher and not kosher. Right? So obviously you can distinguish between a donkey and a cow. That's not hard to distinguish. Right? Loma ne'amar ben atomei ben ator, ben tmei lechol ben tahor lechol. What's kosher and what's not kosher to you, meaning in essence it could be it's a kosher animal, but it wasn't prepared properly or something's wrong with it, that's also trade. It's also not kosher. Ben tmei lechol ben tahor lechol. Ben nishchat rubo shel kanal nishchat chetzio. Right? And whether it was shechted most of the way, the trachea and the esophagus have to be mostly cut, or only halfway. How much is the difference between half and most? Well, hair's breadth. Right? A mashu. Okay? And here also, he's using the word trefa very loosely, because an animal that wasn't shechted properly, only shechted halfway, is a nevela. It's not a trefa. Okay? So here he's using again, like we said before, trefus is a catch-all term, except here he's using trefus not to include behemoth tmeos and shkotzim or whatever, but trefa meaning any animal that's a kosher animal that isn't kosher to eat, either because it's a trefa, which means it was shechted properly but it has some kind of disease, or it wasn't shechted properly and then it's a nevela. He doesn't mention nevela. He mentions that's under the umbrella word of trefa here, to distinguish it just between behemos tomeos, which are animals that aren't kosher at all. Okay, but it's clear he brings a raya to nevela when he's talking about trefa. So it means trefa means that idea of something that's not kosher. Before he used it as a catch-all term. Here he's using it a little bit more specifically, but it doesn't mean only trefas, because he's bringing a raya from a nevela to a trefa. Ad kan l'shomim. V'amr l'shomim zeh v'siyum amorim. V'kama bein ruba v'chetzio mole asa'ara. How much is the difference between most and half? A hair's breadth. L'haros kama nifla koach ha-mitzvah. Shechuta sa'ara mavdil bein tumah l'tara mamash. Right? There's only a hair's breadth that distinguishes between tumah and tahara. V'ine komi sheyesh lo moach v'kod kodo. Anybody who has a brain in his head. Right? If you think of it, so it's poison. Something that's not kosher is a poison. Okay, it may not poison your body, but it poisons your neshama. Or if it's not poison itself, it's something mixed with a poison. Right? In other words, if something tray fell into your food, mixed in. Kineim dover zeyera. Somebody told you, right, well, there may be 1% of poison in this food, right? We're not sure, it may have fallen in or whatever, would you eat it? Right? People, anything that maybe causes who knows what kind of diseases, and it has chemicals in it or whatever, people stay away from. Most people, right, wouldn't think of eating something that there's a chance that maybe there's something poisonous in it or dangerous. Imishar lo boeza beis michush, afilu choshek tana, vavish lo yekel, even a small suspicion that maybe this thing, causes this disease or that disease, or so it's, the government prohibits it, and you're not allowed to use it, and you can't have, not even made a law, you can't have things that have trans fats in them or whatever. because some people say, or there's a study that these things are dangerous and they raise your cholesterol or whatever. And a person who doesn't care and eats things that he knows are harmful, physical, right, is an idiot. So things that are not kosher are poison. Except they're not poison to your body, they're poison to your neshama. Therefore, how could you be mekel when there's no clear heter? When there's a clear heter is one thing, you know, to be overly cautious where there's no reason to be careful, so you'll starve to death physically, right? And that's not right either, right? It's enough with the Torah Asur, you don't have to have other things. But if there's a chashash, in other words, it's not completely okay. Yeah, maybe it could be mekel, whatever, but according to the regular halacha, this wouldn't be good. Not talking about chumras. We're talking about not being mekel and saying that, well, you know, there is one opinion that says it's okay, or b'di'evit, it could be it's okay, or, right? But under normal circumstances, we would say that it's not okay. So then a person, if he wants to be mekel, right, and go against the normative halacha, just be an idiot. Why would you want to put yourself in such a dangerous situation? Put a knife in your throat, right, if you're a bal nefesh, and you realize that sometimes you have to close your throat and close your mouth, what's it called, from eating things that there's even a chashash. Okay, which translates to why we are machmer to eat mahadrin, right? The ma'aser, what's wrong with using a regular hesher? When Rabbi Nestor spoke here on Sukkos, so he mentioned this idea, but it's not, in Eretz Yisrael, it's much much different than it is in Chutz Laretz. In Chutz Laretz, there were reliable hesherim that pretty much everybody trusted. If you wanted to be more machmer, you could. But the reliable hechsherim were reliable. And then there were hechsherim who were known not to be reliable at all. They were unscrupulous people, or people who did it for the money, who didn't know what they were doing, whatever. Right? So there were hechsherim that everybody accepted, and even those hechsherim sometimes relied on coolers or whatever, so people knew that if they wanted to be more machmer, they could be more machmer. Right? For instance, in Chutz Laretz, the OU, the Chaf K, the OK, were hechsherim that rove rubo people, except for chassidish places or whatever, relied on. They were reliable hechsherim. And even though they were makel in certain things, which Chutz Laretz were accepted, like cholov stam, they used non-cholov Yisrael products. But people wanted to be machmer and chol of Israel, so didn't use those hechsherim for those things, but they used them for other things, for the most part. I mean, we're talking in the last 20 years. Okay. So, but then you knew that you could rely on these hechsherim. They basically were reliable. You wanted to be extra careful, fine. That was what's it called. Then there were hechsherim that didn't use things that weren't chol of Israel or whatever. But you knew that if it wasn't a problem of milk products, that you could rely on an OU, an OK, a Chaf K, or whatever. And then you knew that there were hechsherim that were not reliable at all for anything, right? Unless something didn't need a hechsher, right? There are hechsherim that the person that was involved over there in kashrus, the hechsherim that were worthless, right? The Triangle K, years ago. I don't know today if it's different or not. Still don't you, because... But the person who took care of it, basically, was a person who probably was a Talmud Chacham, he knew something, but he was unscrupulous. For whatever reasons he had, he held that you don't have to check things or whatever. I mean, I'll give you two examples of what it means, unscrupulous Hashgacha, the Triangle K. Person's no longer alive, I'm not going to tell you his name. But in any case, but... He used to give a heksher to shortenings and oils that were made in swift plants. Swift is mamish, the chazer schmaltz, but they made a vegetable oil there too. but they made it on the same equipment. They never koshered it. Never. I was there. What's it called? In the plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Swift plant. And they told me they would not let water into their pipes because ruins their whole system, right? Pollutes the system of the thing. So what did he do? He said that the first 100 pounds of kosher oil will kosher the machinery, and the rest will be kosher. It was be'en, you could know some chan bittel the chatchila. It was horrendous. Okay, and he had no mashgiach there either. All they did was check the records to see what batches they made or whatever. So it was totally without any hashgach. Similar to that, I used to give a hechsher for the Chaf K to a bakery supply factory. They made bakery supply, commercial things, dough conditioners, shortenings, things like that. These things were made from the same ingredients could be kosher, or the same ingredients could be mamish treif. In other words, you could have a dough conditioner that was made with an ingredient that was vegetable. The same exact ingredient could be animal. Two exact same thing. Just one was the animal variety, one the vegetable variety. They could use either one interchangeably. So obviously, right, and it's all goyim. You couldn't trust them, right? So there had to be a mashgiach on the spot when they made this thing and they put in this kind of ingredient, and the mashgiach had to see that it came from a sealed kosher supply, not from the non-kosher supply. So, and they had a kosher because this plant was made kosher, made for things of kosher and not kosher on the same equipment. So they had to have 24 hours. Right, usually didn't work on Shabbos or Sunday, so the thing was down for 2 days. And Monday morning we came in and koshered the equipment. I used to go there, spend a few days there in a motel that they had to pay for. The people wanted the hashgacha, and I had to be there over the mashgiach, mamish the whole time. We sealed the things up at the end of the day and broke the seals when we came back in the morning, so nobody could tamper with it overnight. It was a big deal, and it cost a lot of money for them because they're paying me for being there for 4 days straight, paying the motel, paying my car rental, whatever, to get there. So it was an expense. So, and had to be there, mamish, the whole time. And then once I sent the mashgiach there, and for some reason he wasn't there for a while, and they put in the wrong ingredient. They're supposed to go to a kosher bakery, whatever, and they put in the animal one, instead of the vegetable one. Except the mashgiach never would have caught it, except they were honest enough to say they made a mistake. And the end, they used it for trade, right? But it was a loss. They lost all that time. So unless there's a mashgiach there, mamish every second, there's no way of knowing what that product is. So I once came there, and the head of the plant, he was a real Southern Baptist religious guy. All these guys were really, redneck religious goyim. During their lunch hour, they would learn New Testament together. And I once asked me to give him a shiur, and then I told him not really up on it. The mamish wanted to be, what's it called? Could you, give us a drasha and Luke, whatever. But that's what they did on their lunch. They were really religious goyim. Okay. And so pretty much we're honest. So the guy tells me, he says, look, he said, I understand why I have to pay for you to come here and watch over our shoulder like a hawk. And I have to pay for your motel, your car rental, or whatever, because the only way that people will know that it's kosher is because they trust you. Now, we would never do anything wrong. We're honest people. If we tell you we're putting in the vegetable thing, we'll put in the vegetable thing. But if it says, John Smith says it's kosher, no, none of you people are going to eat it. Right? It has to be Rabbi Lev says it's kosher, not John Smith. He says, I understand that 100%. Okay? He said, but tell me. He said, this rabbi from the Triangle K sends his brother-in-law here to oversee also similar kinds of things that you're overseeing. He comes in the morning, looks around for about 5 minutes, goes to Disney World, was near Orlando, for the day, right? Comes back at the end of the day to pick up his check and looks around again for 5 minutes. Now, what in the world could he see? We could have put pig's feet into that. He never would have known. There's no way of knowing. There's no way of checking. There's no way of doing anything. Right? He just looked at the thing before we started, and he looked at it after it was finished. What in the world could he see? We could have done anything. Now, we said, we're honest people. If we say we're going to do it the way that they want it, we'll do it. So it was kosher. But he didn't know that. And he put his name on it. Well, his brother-in-law, this rabbi, put his name on it. He said, now, how could they do that? Right? Why is that okay? Why? I said, I understand why you have to do what you do, but why is it okay the other way? So, after thinking, what am I going to tell this guy? Because I told him like this. I said, you know, you have lawyers that you go to? He said, yeah. I said, you know that there are scrupulous lawyers and unscrupulous lawyers? He said, yeah. I said, you go to doctors? I said, yeah. I said, you know, there are doctors who are quacks and doctors that are reliable? I said, yeah. So I said, well, the same thing goes for rabbis. There are rabbis that are reliable and there's rabbis that are unreliable. He said, I thought that was the answer, but I thought it only applied to priests. That's what he tells me. But that's a metzias. So you knew that there were hechsherim that were worthless, basically. There were hechsherim that were reliable, and that was it. Here in Eretz Yisrael, it's completely different. Here in Eretz Yisrael, there's two levels of hechsherim for the same people. Like the example I'd love to give is Rav Reuben. Rav Reuben in Rehovot gives two kinds of hechsherim. One is mahadrin, and the other one's a regular hechsher. Okay? If you ask Rav Reuben if you should use his regular hechsher, right, he'll tell you it's not for you. Now, what does that mean? I mean, so if it's not for you, how can you give the hechsher? I would never give a hechsher in chutz laretz or something I wouldn't eat. How could I tell you to eat it if I wouldn't eat it? But here it's different, and I understand the reason why. Here, the Rabbanut feels that they have a responsibility to the general population here. And if they're going to not be mekel, not be machmer, but not be mekel. There's a difference between being mekel and not being machmer. There's the regular halacha. Then, if you want to go beyond that, that's called being machmer. But the regular halacha is okay. Then there's a regular halacha, but under certain extenuating circumstances, you could, you know, get by with less. But if that's not really what the regular halacha is, that's called a kula. That's being mekel. So, for instance, now it's not that bad. I'm not sure even what the Rabbanut does now. But it used to be that you couldn't get kosher gelatin or anything that was reasonably good as a product that was similar to kosher gelatin. Now it's different. They had agar-agar, but it wasn't product-wise, it didn't accomplish the same thing that gelatin did. Gelatin, according to most opinions, is not kosher, even though it goes through a whole process or whatever. There is opinions, kosher opinions, that say that it's okay, but it's not accepted. It basically is a kula. Okay? So, the Rabbanut said, if we are not going to allow kosher gelatin, right, so then we're not going to be able to give a hechsher to a lot of products. And if we can't give a hechsher to a lot of products, people are going to eat those products where they're going to be mamish treif. So if we're going to accept this kula and give a hechsher to these products that have gelatin, at least they'll be kosher according to one opinion. But if we don't give the hechsher, then people will eat things that are mamish treif. So we have a responsibility to the hamonam who aren't. It's not that they won't eat it if it's not kosher. They'll eat if it's not kosher. But if they get it kosher, they'll eat kosher. So we have a responsibility to those people. That's what they felt. Same, I'll give another example. A restaurant that has a mashgiach that comes in once a week, but it's constantly cooking. The people are not frum. Me'ikr hadin, it's probably okay. There's a certain mirsas that they're caught, they'll lose their the hechsher, and they'll be, exposed, and people won't eat there. So there's a certain, but lemaisa, that's ridiculous. Since there's no supervision over there, nobody's watching what's going on, there's so many things that could go wrong in a restaurant, chances are that it's not okay. So even though, according to the strictest halacha, right, minimum standard, you can't say it's trait, but definitely there's a lot of chance that things over there are going on that are not okay. That the mashgiach couldn't know coming once a week. And that could happen a million times a day in a restaurant. Therefore, if you want to really know that things are kosher, you need a mashgiach tamidi. You need a mashgiach there constantly. Even that's sometimes not enough. But if you want to go according to the barest halacha, it's okay. Now, they say like this, if we don't give hashgacha to a shawarma place that's owned by somebody and run by somebody who's not from, there's nobody from there, and the mashgiach comes once a week, right? If we don't, so that lemaisa is kosher, lahalacha. So people are going to eat kosher. If we don't give hashgacha like that, then there's going to be very few places they're going to have a hashgacha. Most places will be trade. And most people will eat in the trade places and not look for that one kosher place that they have to go out of the way for. So better to give a hechsher that is not up to lechatchila standards, because there's a lot of people. But how about the people who want to eat, don't want to rely on that, who want what's really 100% okay? They don't want to take a chance. They don't want to know that there's some poison mixed in, baby. Right? But they have it, you know, it's okay. You can read. So that's why they have a mahadran. Mahadran means we don't rely on these leniencies, and we do it with a mashgiach tamidi, and we do it without the gelatin, only kosher gelatin or whatever. And there's a million other examples. That's why there's two levels of hechsher. And that's why the non-mahadran ones are not mahadran. If you ask for Reuben, he could still tell you it's not mahadran. So you can believe him. He's 100% reliable. So if he tells you it's not mahadran, it's not. And mahadran doesn't mean that most of the time. Sometimes not like that. But most of the time, the mahadran means it's up to the standards of halacha, not below the standards of halacha. Not kulas, not necessarily chumras. Sometimes it's the other way. That's a taka chumra. And that the mahadran over there means that it's not really necessary, and you could get by with less than that, and that's also okay. That's why sometimes we're matter things that are not mahadran, because the mahadran things maybe are machmer, things that you don't have to be machmer, whatever it may be. Or the bidyeva, we accept the non-mahadran things, for instance, Shabbat, milk. There's really nothing wrong with milk, okay? Sometimes they add powdered milk, which could be chalav stam. But in most cases, that's not the problem. The problem is with Shabbos milk. Milk that was milked on Shabbos. According to most posts, according to Mishnah Berurah, that's okay. You can use milk, Shabbos milk. It's a chumrah not to use it. Okay? For various reasons. So there, b'di'evid, you could use the regular milk, because l'halach it's okay, but l'chatchila, better not to rely on that. V'yotzi, everybody, since it's readily available, the mahadran milk, why not use the mahadran milk? There are other certain things like that too. But that becomes very complicated. Because now we're not talking anymore about, you know, things that, you know, this person's reliable. Rav Reuben's reliable. But that same Rav Reuben gives echsherim that are not reliable, and he'll tell you they're not reliable for you. They're reliable for the Hamona. Somebody wants to be Samachan. That's most of the Rabbanut was like that. What do you mean difference? Yeah, one says Mahadra, one says Mahadra. Right, one says Ragil. Kashrus Ragila. Now there are definitely Echsherim here, Rabbanut Echsherim, they're not reliable. Not just because they're a different standard, the people are not reliable. But in the last 10 years maybe that's gotten better, and they've started to weed out. But they're definitely Echsherim, not Rabbanut Echsherim. The same Mahadran. They're not reliable, they're probably treif. In Rishalayim, plenty of them, plenty of Shmarmutai, whatever, with all these Echsherim that are not reliable.
And some of them have really, really kosher sounding names, really frum sounding names. And people who spoke rebbes or whatever, that they're worthless, mamish worthless. So here it's very confusing, very, very confusing. And that's why it becomes very difficult to know what's okay and what's not okay. And that's why over here there are people that only use certain hashgachas and wouldn't think of using other ones, which other people consider okay, and other people who will only use other hashgachas and not use the other ones, and it becomes even more confusing, right? Especially when you have families where some people only use this one and some people only use that one, and right? I know some people, because they're more Lubavitch or whatever, they only use Rav Landau. That's they wouldn't use Sheris Yisrael or whatever, right? And some people the opposite. They would only use Sheris and they wouldn't think of using Rav Landau. So then it becomes more political, you know, who you hold from or whatever, not to do with Kasheris, and that makes it even more complicated. So it becomes extremely, so you have to, you know, accept something and stick to it. And so here we have some kind of semblance of order, which, to tell you the truth, is still not foolproof and not I don't know, again, we can't do what everybody does, because nobody does everything the same. So without going into more detail, right, we still stand by the list that David puts out. But you should realize why we need a list like that, and why our list is probably much more comprehensive than if you go ask other people from other places. Okay, I don't know if that makes you more confused or less confused, but at least if you know what you're confused about, that makes it better.
But just to Muhammad's course, yeah. A lot of the things about the political reasons for not to use Halei Hekshirim, something is a different type of politics, that since Hekshir has to do with a community, some Hekshirim are Hekshirim of a community, like Edith Haredes Bells. So the people from that community want to support their own Hekshir, because they need it, because that's part of the community, so that's why they don't use Halei Hekshirim.
I hear. Okay, that could be. That could be, but usually it's not like that. They say that, you know, what's it called? I don't know. It becomes like, you know, if we don't use that, then it's probably no good. And somebody else who uses it, it's and the radio Kol Chai. There's one guy who always says, right, if you know, Mahadran, whatever, is very nice, but shouldn't say the other ones are treif. Somebody who eats the other hechsher, he can't say he's mamish eating treif or whatever. He's just, well, we're machmer, whatever reason, we're makbid, not machmer, makbid on a certain list we rely on. The other ones may be fine, but we know this one is the one that fits our standards, that's what we use. And the other one, somebody who eats it, you can't say he's eating treif, right? To the point where mustami, you're allowed to give it to the person who holds from that hechsher. You're not over lifnei iver, because I don't think it's treif. I'm makbid not to use it. So somebody who is not makbid not to use it can use it. Whatever. It's okay, but that gives you a little bit of an understanding why it's so confusing.
Does tshuva help the team to play?
Does tshuva help? Yeah. Tshuva takes away two things. Tshuva takes away the effect of the aveira, and it takes away the
melody.